Hi, reader. I'm Cindy Burnett. Welcome to my award-winning podcast, Thoughts from a Page, which is a member of the Evergreen Podcasts Network. On the show, I chat with authors whose books I have enjoyed about their new releases, and I give you a peek behind the curtain of the publishing industry with my Behind the Scenes series. With so many books coming out weekly, it can be hard to decide what to read, so I find the best ones and share them with you. If you're looking for a community of readers, bonus content, and a chance to read books before they hit the shelves, I hope you'll consider joining my Patreon group, which is filled with a wonderful bunch of book lovers. The link to join is in the show notes. Today, I am chatting with Jennifer Ryan about the Underground Library. I am a huge fan of hers. I have read almost all of her books and loved them, and this one is no exception. As soon as I saw the cover and the title for this one, I knew I had to read it. I am always all there for books about books, and this one is no exception. It has a stunning cover, and the inside is every bit as good. Jennifer lives in the Washington, D.C. area with her husband and their two children. Originally from London, she was previously a nonfiction book editor. I hope you enjoy our conversation.
Science! 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 Hello, podcast fans. Want to get weird with us? Come check out the Mad Scientist Podcast. We are a weekly show that looks at the history, philosophy, and hard facts behind your biggest paranormal questions.
Did the government really pay for a psychic spy program?
Yes!
Is it true that surgery got its start in grave robbing?
Yes!
Can a roller coaster really kill you?
Legally, we can't say so for sure, but sometimes, yes! Join myself, Chris Cogswell, and my co-host, Marie Mayhew, as we examine the science, philosophy, and history behind the strange and unusual. All to discover what's possible and plausible versus what's, well, just made up. Check us out wherever you find your favorite podcasts. The Mad Scientist Podcast.
Welcome, Jennifer. How are you today?
I'm great. Thanks very much for having me.
I'm so glad you're here because I have been a fan of yours since the Chilbury Ladies Choir. I still recommend that book to people all the time. I just love it. And so I'm excited that we're finally getting to talk.
Oh, that's wonderful. I'm so glad that you love that book. I loved it personally. I really enjoyed writing it.
It's so much fun. And I loved the Underground Library equally as well, I will say. Such a fascinating subject matter. And I have so many questions. But before we dive into them, would you give me a quick synopsis of the Underground Library?
The Underground Library is based in London during the Second World War. And there's three women who come to London for different reasons, either work, one is a refugee, and one is working there between college and school and going to college. And together they form a bond, really, through books, the books and their love of the library and their real understanding of the need for a library and the bond that books create between people and how necessary that is in wartime.
So how did you learn about Bethnal Green and the library moving underground and really the community moving underground during the war?
During a lot of, most of my books are based on research that I've read in books, or normally it's through diary entries and letters and first-person interviews that I've had with people about the Second World War and their experiences of it. And I learned through that and through some of the books that I read about the events in Bethnal Green and how a bombing of the library basically forced a bunch of librarians to have this idea, this wonderful idea, to take all the books and the library itself down to the underground station, which is where a lot of people were sheltering during the war.
And it isn't just a library that's down there, right? I mean, it ends up being this entire community because people are spending so much time down there during the harshest parts of the Blitz.
That's right. And the book actually covers this from, you know, the moment at the beginning of the Blitz, the London Blitz, when bombs were just cascading down on the east end of London, which is where the book is set. And the government actually restricted the use of underground stations as shelters because they felt that they were supposed to be used for transport. They wanted to kind of keep them free for transportation. But what happened was they quickly realized that they make the perfect bomb shelters because they're so far down underground. And there's so many of them throughout London. There's an underground shelter on so many street corners if you use the stations. So a lot of people bombarded the stations in order to get down there and start using them. And then the government had to give way. So already by the time the library was bombed, there were people using them as shelters. But it wasn't very far progressed into the Blitz. And so there weren't an awful lot of resources that had been put down there. There was a canteen, a kind of makeshift canteen with a woman serving tea. And that was about all. But over time, you know, over the extent of the war, these communities underground, they housed 5,000. Just the Bethnal Green one alone had 5,000 people sleeping there every night. They had a hospital clinic down there where women gave birth. That wasn't unusual. There were quite a few underground stations throughout London who had that. They provided metal bunks, bunk beds, three tiers of bunks down a lot of the corridors so that people could actually sleep well during the night. And it just became a part of their routine to get home from work, quickly get their things together and something to have for supper or dinner, and then go down to the shelter and set up for the night. So a lot of evening activities sprung up as well. Apparently in one, there was a theatre, and there were obviously a lot of card games and organised events. There was an orchestra that went round and played in every underground shelter from time to time as well. So you had an awful lot of things. This was the only underground that had its own library, though. And people used to come. They used to get on the underground in the early evening before the train stopped and come to Bethnal Green Underground Station, especially to use their library. It was very well known and very well appreciated and loved.
I just love that people would take the train to come to Bethnal Green to check out books. Obviously, I'm a huge book lover, as I'm sure you are. So this kind of story is just one of those that it cheered me from beginning to end. Obviously, there are some grim parts because it's World War II. But just with the whole story taking place surrounding books and a library and all of that, it made me so happy.
Oh, thank you so much. That's so wonderful to hear. I think books are my happy place, as are libraries. And I found it very, very easy to imagine what it was like in those days and how wonderful it would have been, how comforting to have this place underground that you could go to, that you could sit inside and read books or just look at the shelves and see what it is. You know, sometimes there's nothing better than looking through a shelf of books and finding titles that you've already read and loved and just re-feeling that sense that you felt whilst you read that book. You know, so if you see, for instance, Pride and Prejudice, which is one of my favorite books, and you just by looking at it, you can feel that lovely warm sensation of how it made you feel when you read it and connecting with those characters inside the story. And I think that really lent itself well to kind of making this such a feel-good book. It really did. And it was just a joy for me to talk about some of my favorite books in the story and have the characters enjoy these different books as well. I think one of my favorite moments is one of the characters, Katie, one of the main characters. She gives a book that she loved as a child to a child. So it was an 11 or 12-year-old girl. And she gives her Little Women to read. And I just love that moment because there's nothing better than sharing a good book with someone that you know will love it. And I knew that I loved writing that part and that all my personal connections with books.
Well, first, I have to say Pride and Prejudice is one of my all-time favorite books. So we share that. And then second, was it really fun to decide which titles you were going to include in those parts of the story?
It was. And I can only feel very sad for the ones that never made it, actually. And there's some wonderful bits of poetry as well that are in there that made it in there as well. And some wonderful songs as well are in there. But mostly it's about the books. Not only are they, you know, talked about by a lot of the characters, but also sometimes there's quite a few that are just mentioned as well, which is lovely. I think what was very interesting is that a lot of not only the main characters, but the group of women who belong to the book club, that is evolves into a book club down in the library. They all obviously have their favorite books and their best characters. And I think that it is so telling. It was such a lovely thing for me to do, to prescribe which one would have, think about that character and almost dwell inside them and think, what would their favorite book be? What would my favorite book be if I were them? And that was a fascinating way to consider a character from the inside as to what they would like best, what would be their best reading material. Two of the characters have an ongoing dispute whether Jane Eyre or Wuthering Heights is better than the other, which is quite humorous. Anyway, it's quite entertaining.
Most definitely. It's so much fun to read about books within a book, I think. And I also think books can really take you away. So if you are sitting in the underground night after night, to be able to just get lost in another story is a great distraction.
Yes, I completely agree. I think that's one of the reasons why the library, historical library, worked so well, is that there were people there with a lot of worries on their minds. They were worried about their houses being bombed. They were worried about children who were evacuated to schools away from London. They were worried about husbands and sons on the front line. So they had an awful lot of worries, and they were sheltering from the bombs as well. So having a good book to while away the hours, it really meant an awful lot to a lot of people.
Yes, a godsend for sure. Did you tour Bethnal Green? Is it still there? I'm assuming it is.
It is. And the library was mended and it's still open. Yes, it's a great big Victorian building as described in the book. Yes, and Bethnal Green is there as well, which is lovely. Very sadly, later in the war, there was a huge disaster where hundreds of people were killed in a stampede trying to get into the underground very quickly with a bomb, a sudden, you know, raid siren. And so there's a big memorial to that. I didn't cover it in the book because it was the wrong part of the war, but it's very sad. I've covered that information inside the author's note of the book and the acknowledgements too.
That's what I was just going to say. I read about that in your author's note. There are times when I have toured places like Shakespeare's home, and I walk through and I just have this kind of otherworldly feeling, like I can feel I'm walking where he walked, which was just the coolest feeling. I have not experienced that many times. And I would wonder if you wouldn't be someplace like that underground station and just kind of feel the people that were there for those particular events.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And also in the library itself. In the underground, you go down there and you think, wow, you know, to have that idea at the time, because at the time, as I said, there was nothing down in the underground. It was just a station and people had only just started to use it as a shelter. So to have that idea to think, right, this is what we're going to do. We're going to give this a try. And then having to persuade, you know, the local councils, those in charge, that that's what you're going to do. You're going to move the library down into the underground. It was quite a massive thing at the time. And it's wonderful to be down there and to kind of feel that presence of them. Yes.
Yes, I think that would be amazing. I have not been to that particular tube station. So when I go to London again, I'm like, okay, I need to go over there and see it and see the library.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes. There's also a museum in Bethnal Green too, a good museum.
Oh, that's right. And I think that's in your author's note as well.
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
Perfect. Well, how did you settle on these three women as your main characters?
Most of my characters and a lot of my storylines, in fact, come from research. So they're not just, you know, they're not just completely collected from some of the research. They're not based on real people, but they kind of are. So, you know, I heard about Sophie, for instance. Sophie, one of the main characters, is a refugee, a Jewish refugee from Berlin. And she came to London on a visa that was meant for domestic workers. So servants, basically. The reason why this came about was that the government at the time, every government in in Europe was restricting refugees of any kind. But a lot of that was because war was brewing and they just didn't know what was going to happen. But there were some humanitarian groups in the UK, in Britain, that were saying, we need to let the Jews, some from Eastern Europe and Germany, we need to let them in because for humanitarian purposes. And so because there was a shortage of domestic servants at the time in the UK, in Britain, the government agreed that anyone who had a job promised as a domestic servant could get a visa into the UK. So that meant that there was an awful lot of women, particularly from Germany and Austria, actually, that's where the bulk of them came from, who were Jewish, who got these domestic servants visas that you got through the local embassy. And and then they came over to work in people's houses, really, as cooks and maids and housekeepers. A lot of them had absolutely no experience doing these jobs at all, but they settled in and did their best. Some of them were taken advantage of, like Sophie, worked to death because her boss knew that her visa depended on it, so he could get away with it. And it was really only when she got out of the job that she actually got a little bit more freedom and managed to get by herself.
And I was unaware of those visas. That was something I didn't know about, and I was glad to learn about it in your book.
Yeah, I think it's very interesting. I think a lot of people also didn't know that Britain had an internment camp on the Isle of Man either. After France was invaded, the government became very worried that Britain was going to be invaded. In fact, it was expected that they were going to be invaded. And because in the past, Germany would send in an awful lot of spies as disguised as refugees, they were really worried about people who had come from overseas to the UK in the recent years, and that they were actually Nazis in disguise, because that played a huge part, particularly in the bombing of Rotterdam in the Netherlands. So what they decided to do, and it was a very quick decision, they decided to round up all of the German and Italian and Austrian people, particularly in London, and send them to this internment camp. So in this particular case, what the internment camp consisted of was a lot of guest houses, because the Isle of Man was a tourism island, so it was full of guest houses and hotels, and which weren't currently being used, obviously, because of the war. So they went and, you know, most of them stayed in guest houses and hotels, and particularly the women. The women definitely went and stayed there. So Sophie ended up being sent to this camp. And it's fascinating because, you know, all the women, they had their own communities and they, you know, it wasn't at all like a prison. They set up their own factories and schools and things. They set up a glove factory, and they made gloves and sent them to the mainland for money. And they lived like civilians, basically, in the towns that they were in. It's very interesting. Did you find it interesting, too?
I totally did. I was just going to say that was absolutely fascinating to me because I wasn't aware of it. But also, I am certainly not advocating that anyone ever set up internment camps because I don't agree with that. But if I were going to be in one, I would want to be there versus any other one I've ever read about.
Yes. Yeah. They didn't have them for very long until they realized that the entire idea was, it wasn't a very good one. So anyway, they then opened them up for people to go back home if they wanted. Yeah,
exactly. But no, that was very interesting. That's one of my favorite things about historical fiction is learning these details that I wasn't aware of. I'm reading a great story, but I also learn aspects of history.
Yes, I completely agree. That's what I love about historical fiction. I think it really adds a new dimension to the reading experience. It's not just about, you know, a good story and delving into the emotions and the psychology of the characters and their situations, but it also has that historical quality that really adds a new layer of depth.
I agree. And my husband and I are big Jeopardy watchers. So we're always watching Jeopardy. And there are so many times that I'm able to answer a question. And he's like, how did you know that? I'm like, oh, I read about it in this book, or I read about it in that book. And so, yes, I really do feel like I learn a lot while I'm enjoying really wonderful stories as well.
Oh, that's great. And yeah. Good luck with Jeopardy. That's wonderful.
Well, I'm only watching it. I'm not trying to go on it. My husband and I just compete, you know, in the house. I have no interest in actually going on the show, but it's very fun to watch it. And you were previously a book editor. So how does that inform your writing?
Well, I used to be a nonfiction book editor. So a nonfiction book editors do an awful lot of writing because, well, I kind of was more of an executive by the time I finished, but I went all the way through. And as an editor, you have to do an awful lot of writing because you have, I'll give you an example. For a while, I did house books, and a doctor writes a book. And first of all, they can't really write very well. And secondly, they haven't got a lot of time to write. So you end up with a list of things they would write about if they had the time. And then you basically have to write the whole thing or rewrite it to make it into a narrative. You know, to make it read well. So that's how I really learned how to write very, you know, properly. And it just gave me a really love for books and publishing, really. Yes.
Okay, that's hilarious that your title is book editor, but you're really doing a lot of the writing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's, I think a lot of people, you need the authors because they're the specialists. They're the ones who have got all the information. But then you need someone to make the sentences work and make it sound good and flow, make the information flow in a logical way.
Translate it into something that people will want to read.
Absolutely, yes.
What surprised you the most when you were writing The Underground Library?
I think the internment. I think that, you know, I read an awful lot about that in different people's experiences, and particularly for the women, they were all incredibly they were either positive or, you know, there were a couple who were like, oh, well, it's better than, you know, better than nothing. I mean, a lot of them came from the Blitz, the London Blitz, and they actually just stayed after they were allowed to go. Some of them stayed after the war as well, because it was never really touched by the war. It wasn't bombed or anything. You could get more food over there. The food was very heavily rationed. So, but if you lived in a more of a countryside place, you had more access to food, but also because it was quite close to Ireland. So you had access to Irish food as well, which was amazing by all accounts in the Second World War. I read once about some female pilots working in England who ended up one day delivering planes to the north of Ireland. And they took a train down to Dublin just so they could have some double cream.
They're like, okay, well, while we're here.
Absolutely. So they went down to Dublin because obviously Ireland was neutral during the Second World War. And they had a cream tea. They had a full lunch with, I think, proper meat, which is something that they hadn't had in ages. And all these other treats, they treated themselves. And then they went out clothes shopping.
Okay, that's great. Well, it's like Portugal. It was the same way. And, you know, again, something I learned by reading a book. And you learn a ton when you're reading these stories and realizing, okay, things are different places. And I'm not sure I realized that about Ireland either.
Yes, yes. No, it's fascinating. And yes, it was a real adventure for them. It's like stepping into a world where there wasn't a war, you know.
Yes, exactly. Well, it's like when you read about the U.S. for so long, and because the U.S. was never bombed, that a lot of the Americans really didn't understand everything that was happening in Europe because it was not so foreign to them.
Yes. No, absolutely. Absolutely. But it meant an awful lot to, I think, everyone in Britain when the U.S. did actually join the war. It was, I think that from our point of view, you were very involved.
Absolutely. I just meant the early years when we weren't. And then even once we were, things were different in the U.S. than they were in France or in England or some of the places that were really in the throes of it all.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
Well, I love your cover. I always love to talk about titles and covers, and I think your U.S. cover is stunning. And when I was looking everything up before our interview, you have a very different UK cover. So let's talk a little bit about the covers and then how you decided on the title.
Great. Great.
So was this the first cover that you saw for the US book?
No, I think I saw a couple of different ones were kind of posted to me, just emailed to me as potentials. And I don't know if you read my book, The Kitchen Front, but it has... I love the cover on that. And it's got a single woman with a cookbook in her arms. And I said, as I emailed back saying, oh, could we just have a single woman on her own? And I gave them a couple of different ideas. And then this was one of the ones that came back. Yes. And I really liked it straight away. And so did my agent. And so we tweaked it a little bit, some of the bits and pieces on it, but it was essentially there. It's beautiful, isn't it? Absolutely gorgeous.
It really is. It's so striking. And it stands out because it doesn't look like every other book cover out there.
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah.
And then the UK cover is really different. So how did they approach that?
I'm not really too sure. They don't really involve me too much in the UK. They just sort of do it. And then, I don't think I even really was sent this one. I think it was just, a fait accompli. But I'm essentially a US author. So, the UK is treated the same way as, say, the German edition or the French edition, etc. So they all have different cuts, slightly different covers. But it's a shame they didn't pick up the American one, because the American cover is great. They did such a wonderful job.
They really did. And I like the UK cover, definitely. But I really love the US cover. I feel like the UK cover looks similar to other books, but it definitely stands out. But this one just looks like nothing I've seen, in a great way.
Oh, well, thank you. Thanks very much.
And then The Underground Library, was that always the title? Obviously, I understand why it's the title, but was that what you started with, or did you all come to that after a while?
No, that was definitely the title. It was always been the title. Yes. Yeah, I think it came to me. I think I read about the library and I just thought, wow, an underground library. And then I thought, yes, that's a great, what a great story behind a great book, So that's how it all began.
I think as soon as people see this cover, they're going to say, I have to read this book. It's just beautiful.
Yes. Well, I hope so. I think so. Yes. Yeah. And but there's other bits of intrigue in the story as well. There's the characters all go through quite a lot that's happening as a result of the war or as a result of their lives. And it takes them on different journeys, different adventures.
Absolutely. And I think that's what I liked so much about the book, is that there is a lot going on in a good way. And I love seeing the path that each character was going to take.
Yes. Yeah. I have to say, I like reading books where there's a lot going on. It's delving deep, but it's not too wordy.
I agree completely. Well, Jennifer, before we wrap up, what have you read recently that you really liked?
I think one of my favorite recent reads is The Secret Book of Flora Lea by Patty Callahan Henry. I don't know if you've read that.
I have, and I've interviewed her. I love Patty.
Oh, great. I love her too. I love her other books. And I think this one's just wonderful, really, just lovely. I've also read recently The Paper Palace by Miranda Cowley Heller. Have you read that?
I have not read that one.
That's a great read too. And I've read a couple of, so while I'm writing about something, I try not to read books that are also about the same thing, because I don't want to get influenced by them, I suppose. So I've also read a couple of books about libraries. So I read The Paris Library, which I didn't read when it first came out because I was already working on The Underground Library at that point. And I love that book. That's just gorgeous. I really enjoyed that. And the other book I read was The Midnight Library by Matt Hay, which is just such an interesting concept. I would highly recommend it. Have you read that one?
I have, and I love it. It's one of those books that truly makes you think. And every time I stress out about something or I worry I didn't make the right choice, I go back to that book again and think, okay, if you make a different choice or you go in a different direction, it changes everything. It isn't one just small thing. So I love the message of that book.
Yes, I think it's an incredible concept and is delivered so well, so clearly and beautifully. It's just a really, really great book. Yes. So I think after reading that, I read everything else that he wrote, because obviously that's what you do. And his other books are lovely too. Really, really great. Yes. So there's a book called Humans that he wrote, which just is just fascinating. It's all these very interesting concepts that he is trying to put across. It's fascinating.
I've only read The Midnight Library of his, but I need to go back and look at his backlist.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. So that's all of my recommendations for now anyway.
Well, that's perfect. That's wonderful. Well, Jennifer, thank you so much for joining me today on the Thoughts from a Page podcast. I can't wait for the Underground Library to be out in the world and to be recommending it to everyone.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been really lovely talking to you.
Hi, I'm Emma.
And I'm Joe.
And we're the professional book nerds. Two Mondays a month, we interview authors and talk about their upcoming books, what drives them, and their go-to order at the cafe.
On Thursdays, we share recommendations and dive into topics readers face, like how do I actually read the books on my to-be-read list?
You can find the Professional Book Nerds podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Want to learn more about us? Our website is professionalbooknerds.com, and you can find us on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok at ProBookNerds.
We hope you'll come and listen, and as always,
happy reading!
Are you tired of seeing your teen or young adult struggle on a path that clearly isn't the right fit? Is your teenager confused about which direction to take after high school? The future of work is changing rapidly, and our kids need to know all of the options available after high school so they're empowered to make the choice that is best for them. In each episode, we explore the latest trends that are shaping the opportunities of today and tomorrow. I'm your host, Betsy Jewell, and this is the High School Hamster Wheel Podcast.
Thank you so much for listening to my podcast. I would love to connect with you on Instagram or Facebook, where you can find me at Thoughts from a Page. If you enjoy the show, please consider joining my Patreon group to access bonus content and support the podcast. If you have a moment to rate the show or subscribe to it wherever you listen to your podcasts, I would really appreciate it. It makes a big difference. And please tell all of your friends about Thoughts from a Page. Word of mouth does wonders to help the show grow. The book discussed in this episode can be purchased at my bookshop storefront, and the link is in the show notes. I hope you'll tune in next time.
I'm a grown-up.
Me too.
Yep, me too. But you know, these days, being a grown-up can really suck.
Luckily, we're grown-ups who grew up in the coolest generation.
We had video arcades.
And also some of the best TV and movies ever made.
We lived the origin of awesome consumer electronics. The list goes on and on.
Yep, Generation X.
Exactly.
And we're Gen X Grown-Up.
Every week, the Gen X Grown-Up podcast explores media, tech, toys, games, and more from both yesterday and today.
Through the eyes of Generation Xers who absolutely love that stuff. You can find us on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts.
Or find us on our website, genxgrownup.com. Life sucks as a grown-up. All right, you think that was good enough?
I hope so, man. I'm tired.
Who listens to a promo on a podcast and then goes and listens to a different podcast?
Right.
I've never done it.
Right. I'm Allison Holland, host of the Kennedy Dynasty podcast. Equipped with a microphone and a long-term fascination of the Kennedy family, I am joined by an incredible cast of experts, friends, and guests to take you on a fun, relaxed, yet informative journey through history and pop culture. From book references to fashion to philanthropy to our modern expectations of the presidency itself, you'll see that there is so much more to Kennedy than just JFK or conspiracy theories. Join me for the Kennedy Dynasty podcast.